Welcome to Conversations with Owens Community College President, Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Welcome to the newest episode of the award-winning Conversations podcast. I'm Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Thank you for listening today. Whether this is your first time with us or if you're a longtime follower, we are so happy that you're joining us as we explore the issues and meet the people who are important to Northwest Ohio and to Owens Community College. Please enjoy our previous episodes and subscribe to Conversations to join us for future episodes. Today, I am so excited to welcome Myron Lewis, President and CEO of the Blanchard Valley Health System. Myron holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in Industrial and Organizational Psychology from Michigan State University. He went on to earn his Master of Science degree in Clinical Social Work from Western Michigan University and later his MBA from Indiana Wesleyan. He's also a fellow of the American College of Healthcare Executives. Myron has more than 30 years' experience in many roles and departments throughout the healthcare industry and has tremendous knowledge on the issues facing our system of healthcare today. He is passionate about healthcare and the community and serves on the Hancock County Economic Development Advisory Board, the Center for Civic Engagement Board, and also serves as a Rotarian. Hi, Myron, and thank you for being our guest today. Thank you so much for being here, Myron. It is a pleasure to have you here on the Conversations podcast. I'm thrilled that you are here. Blanchard Valley Hospital is a very meaningful partner to Owens Community College, particularly with our Findlay campus. And so I'm thrilled that you could be with us today.
I'm absolutely glad to be here, and thank you.
Thank you. Well, one of the things we ask every one of our podcast guests, of course, being an institution of higher education, is when did you know that you wanted and needed education past high school?
You know, I think I was slow on the draw on that one. When I graduated from high school, I really wasn't certain what I wanted to do. I hadn't set my marks on a bachelor's degree in anything or a doctorate or anything. I just decided that I would sign up for some classes. So I started out at community college and started taking some classes. And I think as I started going through classes and I started learning, I all of a sudden felt like, hey, this is interesting. And for the first time, I went from maybe the high school, which I really wasn't focused, to becoming more focused and purposeful and really started to draw naturally towards psychology. I found it interesting and it kept my interest.
Isn't that amazing? How sometimes just starting and getting your toe in the water is what you need to kind of keep going.
Yeah, I think it took me probably through even my first year of actually deciding that I think I'm going to continue this.
Well, when you continued, you earned your Bachelor of Arts from Michigan State University in Psychology, and then you went on to earn your first master's degree from Western Michigan University in Social Work. Then, a decade later, you returned to classes to get your MBA from Indiana Wesleyan. Talk to me about that educational journey, and particularly with the two different master's degrees, and how did they coincide with what you wanted to do with your career?
It kind of starts out, just like I said before, I just kind of kept moving forward. And when you look at my personality style, one of my strengths from is a learner. So I'm a continuous learner. So I think that going to school always fulfilled that for me. You know, in between those gaps, I was learning too. I went and got my fellowship for the American College of Healthcare. I got my nursing home administrative license. I became a certified PM. So I spent about 10 full-time years in school learning. And I really think that's quite a big part of my foundation. But when I decided after I graduated with my undergraduate in psychology, I thought I wanted to be a therapist. So that's what I did. I went ahead and got my two-year degree and doing counseling and really enjoyed that and was doing that. And I, by accident or purpose, maybe good fortune or the calling, I worked at the hospital and really did on some on-call work in the emergency department for traumas and suicides and patient care issues that usually are pretty difficult. And I started doing that on the side. So I had no interest in healthcare. My vision wasn't in healthcare. I thought I had met my dream. I'm a counselor and a therapist, and that's changed my course by accident. And that led to all those other educational experiences, and the journey was on. And I didn't know where it was going to end. I just kind of focused on what was in front of me that week, that year, and really laid focus on that.
Well, it's amazing how those experiences just can kind of shape your perception and open up different doors and avenues that you weren't thinking of previously.
I had no understanding of those doors when I graduated from high school, and even when I decided to start my journey through higher education. I would say to all the students that are in programs and services or at Owens Community College and any other institution to continue your dream, but continue to strive to the future, even though you don't know the answer. Don't wait for to have that perfect answer is, if you think of just how my career evolved, it was a total accident, right? It evolved over persistency. And so I would just encourage people to be persistent, find something they do it to their very best, and continue learning and striving and just letting things unfold and enjoying the journey.
I think that's awesome advice. Now, you used a term earlier, PM. What's a PM?
Project manager.
Okay.
A certified project manager. Mm-hmm. So a PMP, I think, is the official title.
Okay. I've only ever heard of those really more on the construction side. And so what was the project management certificate that you earned?
Think of a project management as how you do projects. Now, you often think of construction, but any big project that you may be working on, by putting a project manager in there, they mm-hmm. put together the timeline, the work, the effort, mm-hmm. make sure all the stakeholders are brought in early and really foster that process. They also bring in tools to help you, the team to learn visual tools and other tools to help you work through a major project. So if you're going on a major venture for program development, mm-hmm. they would help you lay out that course.
You've had a 30-year career in healthcare. And so you talked about your background as a counselor, social work, program coordinator for Metro Health in Michigan. And then you went to various positions to where you're now the president and CEO of Blanchard Valley Health System in Hancock County. Can you tell us a little bit more about your career journey? You talked a little bit about how one thing led to another that led to another, even though it may not have been what you had set out from the outset. There was kind of a natural progression there from one thing to the next. And so can you talk about that in your role now?
I started out as a social worker in the bedside doing patient care and a counselor before that. And when I got in the hospital, mm-hmm. I recognized that I just wanted to help people. That's why I was doing what I was doing. And so it just gave me an opportunity to touch more people than I could individually. And so I remember I was working the floor and I asked the director of nursing for that unit. I said, "Do you think I could be a leader someday?" And she looked at me and smiled and said, "You'll be okay," and said yes. And if she would have answered that question differently, I don't mm-hmm. know that I would have pursued a leadership position. So I think not only is it your career, but the people you cross and if they mm-hmm. support you. And she supported me and said, "Yes, you could do that." That gave me the confidence and courage to go apply for my first leadership position. Mm-hmm. And after I got that position, I was really into that continuous learning curve of really understanding not only what management is, mm-hmm. but what healthcare is. And that became a multi-decade experience of continuous learning. And I think going to school through that process, I'd never had this high expectation of being CEO. Mm-hmm. If you'd have asked me then, would I be CEO? I would have smiled at you and laughed. And I would have said, "No, I just like to do what I'm doing." Mm-hmm. I think after I was able to understand and excel at something and deliver, then another challenge came forward. I always accepted the challenges. I mm-hmm. always accepted the work. I always showed up every day on time and enjoyed the continuous learning. I think that just naturally built upon each other. So I moved from a manager to a director to an executive director to a VP to a COO to a CEO. Mm-hmm. And so that took a little bit of time, though.
It's interesting that you say that. One of our previous podcast guests was an alum and also works in HR, Tom Daniels. And he said, "You're responsible for being ready when the opportunity presents itself."
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's what you did your entire career, either through preparation, learning, curiosity, you know, being willing to do what's next. When different opportunities presented themselves, you were in a position to say, "Yes, I'm interested," or "Yes, I am ready. And, yeah. and I want to be able to do that."
Yeah. My response is, "How can I help?" Mm-hmm. And that even continues today. I serve on a national board with American Hospital Association representing mm-hmm. the country and in the Midwest. And you still learn. Mm-hmm. And it's continuous. So you never arrive. Mm-hmm. But I think that's right. If you're ready and you're interested in continuously learning, I think the doors are there for you.
Blanchard Valley Health System was named on Newsweek's list of the world's best hospital this year as a 5-year champion. That is an achievement. And so congratulations to you and to the entire hospital system.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. Well, you know, we have 3,300 associates, and I think it's our people that make that happen. Mm-hmm. It's not me. Mm-hmm. It's the leadership team. It's the staff. And it's the support of the community mm-hmm. and the trust of the community that has been earned for a long, long time, well before I got there. Mm-hmm. My hope is to keep that strong and keep it moving forward long into the future.
Well, I'm sure there's a symbiotic relationship there that you have a very large role in kind of setting the culture, the mission, the vision, all of that to keep Blanchard Valley as strong as it is.
It's certainly something I invest a lot of time and energy in. I don't know if I've arrived yet, but that's something I continually focus on.
Well, I guess part of it is that if you ever believe you arrive, then there's no need for continuous improvement. And there's no need for that, you know, striving for how can we be better? How can we, you know, do what's next? How can we be on the forefront? And so in many ways, I think that's a great thing to not arrive.
Yeah, and one of my other, I have five strengths from Gallup Strength Finder, and one of them is a futurist. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always looking into the future farther ahead. And I think that's something a part of my makeup that I can't stop. And mm-hmm. so that keeps me way looking to the future. And then so it always excites me about what could be next.
So when I think about your career path, starting in mental health and then moving forward, I don't know that anyone would have predicted that it would have had the destigmatizing focus that it has right now mm-hmm. and how important it is given what the situation may have looked like 20, 30 years ago, where it was something that didn't have the kind of prevalence in everyday conversation that it does now. And so as you think about healthcare as a whole, mm-hmm. what are some of the things that you think are going to be on the horizon and in the future for healthcare?
Well, I think we have the immediate right now where we're feeling the same pressures as many others. We have the economics that are facing us all, higher expenses, and mm-hmm. our healthcare is going to have to figure itself out because most of our reimbursement is from CMS or Medicare, which is retirees, mm-hmm. or Medicaid, and self-pay. And commercial pay is actually a smaller percent. And so as the costs continue to go up, it's challenging us to try to find new ways to meet and deliver the care because, we just can't get paid more and more. We have to really look at our processes. But you challenge that with the aging population right now, baby boomers, 10,000 boomers a day turn 65. And so the demand for healthcare is only going up for the next 15 years. So the demand's going up while the workforce is shrinking a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so you press that against the economics and you say, well, how are you going to manage this into the future? Mm-hmm. And I think that we're going to have people be more and more in power of their medical record, of their care, mm-hmm. as we focus more on health than we ever have before. I think we just have a unique challenge right now coming off of the heels of COVID, which was really tough on the healthcare industry, mm-hmm. followed by some tense economics and the workforce challenges. I think right now we're kind of navigating that, mm-hmm. and that's first and foremost. But I think how we're going to navigate ourselves out of that is really looking at processes and looking at scale and size and efficiencies and really having to make sure that our operations are really smooth and in the best interest of our patients.
Use the term AI. Mm-hmm. And AI is, you know, very buzzworthy and it mm-hmm. can be scary to folks. Realistically, when you think about it, different forms of artificial intelligence have been in use in technology on your cell phone, wherever, for years now.
Absolutely.
And so how do you demystify AI from a healthcare perspective?
Yeah, I think it's not as mature as people like to think it is, mm-hmm. as it is in the paper. I'd say we're very much at the infancy from that. You know, AI tied to patient care is going to be pretty scrutinized. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen by accident. You know, AI in your phone, okay. You got lost in your map, right? We've all had that happen before. AI in our world is going to change different things. One, it's going to improve back office functions. So that's non-patient touching. In other words, how our billing or processes work in the back offices or how supply chain is ordered. We can use automatic fillers. You can use a lot of technology to enable efficiencies. And mm-hmm. that's one of the things that we're going to have to harvest in order to be successful. But you also have clinical AI where you're using artificial intelligence basically to process mm-hmm. and process billions and trillions of bits of information to help you explore the diagnosis. A simple example is just a simple mammogram. You know, today a mammogram is reviewed. It's reviewed by a physician that's gone through extensive training. The digital view of the MRI is 3D and it's very good. It's very clear compared to what it used to be when mm-hmm. it was an old X-ray. But today we can filter, you know, this is happening. It's not mainstream yet, but this is the stuff that's being developed, is that every one of those images and diagnoses will be entered into a computer, and that computer will evaluate 20 million or 100 million or 200 million mammograms, and it will read for every single one of those. And so it will do a cross-reference read on a mammogram to make sure it's absolutely accurate. By doing that, we get more positive reads that are correct, mm-hmm. and really allows us to process. Similarly, at the great age of 50, one of the preventative things you do is get an endoscopy and mm-hmm. to make sure that you don't have colon cancer. As you go through that, we actually have a scope that goes in. It has a camera on it, but it can watch and read. Think of millions of those being watched. And so when it watches and reads, it will also identify items. Mm-hmm. So you'll see technology from data information coming in to help us diagnose. And then we can choose our treatment plan according to that. We can also look at efficacy, like in cancer services. Like if you have a certain cancer, what was all the research says about that? And then we can start to pull your genetics mm-hmm. and tie that to the medications to understand through hundreds of thousands and millions of tests, which one will align best with you. That'll get to more precision medicine into the future. So for me, AI is going to transform our industry, mm-hmm. But it's not all that set in place right now. That's all in place of being in place. And so time will be our friend, and it'll be scrutinized heavily before, as it gets rolled out.
Just like, you know, we talk about technology in general, it is a tool. It doesn't necessarily replace human decision-making or care, but it allows for the synthesis of significantly more information than one individual may have at any given point in time.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can really pull that, but it'd be hard for the computer, at least today, to look at somebody and look at their skin tone, their eyes, and if they're mm-hmm. dilated and their mucus, and you know, so the human interaction is still going to be really important.
It's absolutely fascinating. I don't know about other people when they choose a healthcare professional. I always look at the background and look at their residency and try and make guesses. And I think that using technology to aid kind of takes care of some of that fear or doubt.
It should drive the overall quality up across the country.
So the city of Findlay has been named the number one top micropolitan community in the United States for the past 10 years. I want to say somewhere I read it was the decade of Findlay, someone had written. And of course, Blanche Valley Health System plays a very pivotal role in the Findlay-Hancock County economy and the stability of the city and amenities, you know, just making it very livable. And so can you tell us about your commitment and partnership with the city of Findlay and the Hancock County community in general?
Yeah, I think it's pivotal. We are the largest employer in the county, and the 75,000 people in the county, around 50,000 in the right in the downtown area. But when you think of that, is Findlay really is a gem. It's mm-hmm. a real special community in the country, and has good schools, has good education, has good mm-hmm. community college. You've mm-hmm. heard of it, Owens?
I've heard of it.
Yeah. you have good businesses there. You have thriving organizations. And so you have a real strong economic engine and education engine and a community engine. I think what makes Findlay special is that the community sees and embraces in its future, mm-hmm. not just its present. So it has a future perspective, kind of like what I bring.
Right.
And so as you look at like our leadership team, all the executive members at our hospital and even our management team, we're on probably every board or every committee in representing all the different organizations mm-hmm. And making sure that we're involved outside of the walls of the hospital and helping support the community. And I think that type of involvement mm-hmm. makes a community special. We're not alone in that. We have the businesses doing the same thing. And so when you have a community that's rich with people willing to invest in the community, you just get something different. You get something mm-hmm. special. And I think that's been what I'd call the Findlay formula or the Findlay secret for a long time. And it's going to continue well into the future. For us, it's very important that we're investing in the health and wellness of the community and how it serves.
Absolutely. Now, Findlay is indeed a special place. And I think the Findlay formula and folks just really willing to come together and seeing it as their duty and their obligation. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like they wouldn't dream of not being able to come to the table to be active in the community or in, you know, different activities or, you know, different cultural options that are available in the Findlay community. And so it makes sense that the hospital is part of that as well.
Yeah, we are central into that across the whole space and even the surrounding counties as well. Mm-hmm. Anywhere we have that pleasure of serving, we want to be involved in the communities.
Well, and I bet you that's part of also why the hospital system has gained some of the accolades that it has as well, is that involvement and nurturing, because that's part of who your employees are and what they draw from in terms of their values and care for their neighbors. So
we're also very fortunate that we are able to deliver exceptional care close to home. So people don't have to travel very far for exceptional care. We're doing an expansion. I was there this morning, and one of the people from the construction company said hi to me and said, hey, I just want to thank you. My wife is going through a double mastectomy and is going to get all their care at the hospital and the care that they need. And they're doing a construction project for us. And they say, this project means more to us than you'd ever know.
Wow.
Because we recognize the difference that you make in the people, the community. And so it's pretty powerful what we do each and every day.
Oh, that has
makes
to
it
be
easy to get up.
Oh, absolutely. It's one of those where it's more of a calling than it is a job in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
So you had mentioned that the hospital is the largest employer in Findlay. And I know that you're a big advocate for the importance of a skilled and adaptive workforce. And obviously for the health system, but also overall when it comes to economic vitality in the community. And so can you talk a little bit more about that and why you believe that workforce development is so incredibly important?
And I think it kind of goes back to those same things, strong businesses and education and churches and just an infrastructure. But what makes that all happen is a strong workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And the workforce is pivotal. Without that workforce, people having careers that they really like and have the opportunity to do what they want every day, and everything else doesn't happen.
Right.
And so to me, finding that career or the work that you want to do, whether it be a trades work, I mean, in the whole construction project I was in today, I mean, there is a lot of tradesman's craft there that was making this happen for the community. So I think that workforce investment is critical for the communities long term, not just today, but well into the future.
Yeah. So can you say where that expansion is taking place?
We're investing in the future. It is challenging times in the healthcare industry, but we aren't like sitting back and waiting for this to go away and solve itself. So we continue to invest in the future. So we're expanding our cancer center, our Arms Family Cancer Care Center, bringing new technology in, replacing technology, expanding the building and the services that we have. We have offered genetic counseling this past year, and updating and remodeling our linear accelerators and all the technology we use to help deliver exceptional care there. Likewise, in July, we're going to be opening up our first inpatient rehab acute care unit, which is going to be an intensive unit to be on the fourth floor of the hospital. It'll serve patients that previously were leaving the greater community to get intensive rehab, which means about 3 hours a day of intensive rehab. Maybe you had a stroke and, you know, you have left side impairment, you can't speak as well or eat. And so this new unit that will open up in July will serve tens of thousands of people over its life and make a difference in their lives. So very excited about that. And the project I was talking about earlier is a new project. It's about a 70,000 square foot facility that we're adding and expanding primary care access to, bringing in our orthopedic services, our physical therapy, our occupational therapy, some imaging services and lab in an outpatient setting, because most care today actually doesn't happen in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think that all the care happens in the hospital. Actually, most of it happens outside the walls of the hospital. And so these new facilities is where a lot of care is. It's in the community.
That's exciting. I'm always comforted by the fact that healthcare providers are always looking at, okay, how do we serve the needs not only now, but in the future? And do we have the right facilities and the right modalities and all of those in place to make sure people's needs are taken care of?
Yeah, we like to see ourselves as a little Mayo Clinic of Ohio. And so these new ambulatory services really help meet the needs of the community. So very excited about it. It's also the largest investment, about $50 million, the biggest investment that we've made in the last 20 years since our pavilion was built. So we're investing in the future.
Speaking of the hospital, we're incredibly grateful for the partnership that we have. And I think one of the things that really speaks to you and your leadership at Blanchard Valley Health System, you called me a couple years ago and said, hey, we have a concern because here we have the college that is literally a stone's throw, but we're having trouble recruiting additional nurses. And mm-hmm. so how can we work together to solve this? And so you got members of your team engaged, members from the Owens team became engaged. And in 2022, Blanchard Valley expanded clinical site access for our nursing students. It really gave our students supervised access to direct patient care. And it also familiarized them with the hospital and how wonderful it is on a greater level than the ones who were able to participate previously. How does the hospital benefit from those kinds of educational partnerships? Because we know that it's not just us. There's several institutions in the area who provide health professionals, you know, mm-hmm. be it us, University of Findlay, Bowling Green, Rhodes, there's a lot that are right near you that I know you have partnerships with.
Yeah, when you think of it, our future workforce is now, right? Mm-hmm. And so we want to get people into the field and choose the field of healthcare because we think it's special and really impacts people's lives. I mean, you can go home and go, wow, mm-hmm. I really had an impact today. But when we have students come in any way or any type of training, it actually helps us too. I mean, it's a lot of time, effort, energy, and focus. But it also makes sure that we're on our top game. And I think in always sharpening our tools to make sure that we're thinking forward to what's next around technology. So students help us get better and we help the students get better. And I think if that continues forever, then you just have a better overall program and educational experience. And ultimately, we want people to get a good education. Mm-hmm. We want them to come out and be able to have a job that is fulfilling for them and allows them to do some of the individual things they want to do in their lives and really make a difference. Also, it's kind of interesting because Blanchard Valley, you know, some people go, well, it's a smaller hospital compared to maybe a bigger hospital. We have all the same complications, mm-hmm. all the same rules, all the same specialties that come together. So you can offer the student a great experience close to home in a really comfortable setting, mm-hmm. more family-focused setting.
And Findlay itself is a very family-focused community to where there's an ethic of care there.
Correct.
I think that is very palpable. Mm-hmm. And I think students get to be a part of that.
Yeah. Everyone truly wants to do the best that they can do. Mm-hmm. And we say exceptional people.
So the healthcare industry is very important to this region. And we know that at Owens, it's one of our top three areas of enrollment. Mm-hmm. As you know, we're currently renovating on our Toledo area campus, the School of Nursing and Health Professions. But from being inside the industry, I would be very interested to hear your perspective about where you see it going. You talked about ambulatory care and, you know, more things that happen in facilities that are not, you know, per se the hospital. But how do you expect healthcare to expand and grow?
I think it's going to expand in many, many ways. And most of them, will be outside of the hospital. Mm-hmm. It'll be even in more into the home. And actually more people actually even taking care of themselves. And home, hospital in the home is like a new program we're looking at across the country and investigating is how can you keep people home and monitor them at home. Mm-hmm. So that changes a different paradigm. It also creates completely new jobs mm-hmm. and experiences that we haven't had. It's kind of like we're going all the way back when the doctor did office visits to your house, right? That's one of the big changes. I think that being a nurse today is not an easy job. It's very tech savvy. You have to be really tech savvy with the technology that's brought in front of you today and the equipment that is brought in front of you today. And I think that's going to just continue. That growth is going to continue. Mm-hmm. But what we're also going to see is us also focusing more and more on wellness. Mm-hmm. One of the big attributions of America's health is we're not in the greatest health because of some of the attributions or some of the behaviors and some of the things that we do. So we need to focus more on wellness and education and prevention and just not taking care of people mm-hmm. when they're sick or they're in an accident. So seeing that pivot mm-hmm. And leveraging technology to that will be very, very important. But our nurses and our clinicians are going to be very important, are going to be in more demand mm-hmm. because of the aging population right now. It's going to go for a long time.
Absolutely.
The demand is going to be there. So for someone to come to Owens Community College and get a degree in nursing, they're going to have opportunities to really make a difference.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this a little earlier in our conversation too, about some of those social determinants or socioeconomic mm-hmm. factors or wellness and how you do prevention. And so can you talk a little bit about what Blanchard Valley is doing to address some of those social determinants of health?
You know, there's a couple of things that I'm specifically working on with the community. Because, mm-hmm. again, I think that if we try to solve it as Blanchard Valley and we don't have the community support, it's hard to get anything to stick. I call it sticky management. When you do something and you write on a sticky and you walk out, you put it on the wall and you walk out, it falls down, right? And that's not success, right? That's making a decision.
That's a good visual.
Yeah. So how do you not be a sticky manager? And so what I see is partnering with the community. So a couple of things. We're looking at the communities and the census tracts, mm-hmm. and we recognize that in our own community that average life expectancy varies well over a decade based mm-hmm. on the street you live on. Well, why is that? Pretty interesting, you know, and because we are not focusing on health, we're focused on taking care of people when they're sick. So you have, right. even in the city of Findlay or in Toledo in Ohio, you have a life expectancy variance up to 20 years based on where you live.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
And that's pretty scary. And so let's look at medicine and the care of people, your socioeconomical condition, your education, your job, some of the pressures you could have, single family, all these different variables that come into play, what behaviors you choose to embark on. Mm-hmm. Some are healthier than others. Those things, the behaviors you choose, smoking versus not smoking, drugs versus not drugs, mm-hmm. staying healthy, eating vegetables, you know, whatever you do, that actually accounts for 70% of your overall health.
Wow.
Your genetics, a small percent. And the medicine and the care that we provide you, a small percent. Your actual overall health is based more on your social determinants of health than the medicine or your genetics and how you choose to behave. So how do we flip that, right?
Absolutely.
And I think that's when you talk about what's the future health care. That's why I say it's about you taking care of yourself, right? Mm-hmm. We need people to make better life choices and we could actually be a lot healthier as a country and as a nation. But flipping medicine takes time. Mm-hmm. And that's the journey we're on.
Most of the conversation, the commercials, what you hear about in the news mm-hmm. is based on less than 30% of what the overall issue is.
Yeah, we should really be focused on the other percent and things would be, well, our total healthcare costs would go down. Mm-hmm. Because the demand, that you wouldn't have the demand. So I think that would be a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. And the world could be a lot healthier place. So we're focusing on those things. We're going to be partnering with our local YMCA mm-hmm. on programs and services. We partner with all kinds of different organizations, 50 North, with mm-hmm. our seniors. And so, again, trying to facilitate wellness and education. And that's why our new park, that new facility, is actually called Wellness Park. And so how do we transition away from thinking hospital and sickness to healthcare prevention, education? There's mm-hmm. so much you can do. And the body is very resilient if you change your behaviors and you stick with them.
So a little different topic, but not too much. One thing that people may not know about you is that you are a published author. And so in 2004, you published a book on the topic of building and maintaining strong relationships called Making Right Turns in Your Relationship. Mm-hmm. What led you to that book?
Well, you dug deep. This was 20 years ago.
We've got a good team.
Yeah. I think that relationships are the foundation of mm-hmm. much of our lives. I always say, mend the relationships you can, mm-hmm. Strengthen the ones you have, and foster new ones into the future. And our relationships will challenge us more than many things. They also help us grow and build us into better individuals. So and it gets back to together we do more. As a community, we can't do it. And so relationships are the fundamental. And in those days, I was a therapist. I did a lot of marriage mm-hmm. and family counseling, and I wanted to really try to share something that would be helpful to people. So I wrote that book. I'm really focused on couples working together mm-hmm. and getting a broader perspective than just their own.
I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I do have one last question for you because you're an incredibly humble person. And when we talked about some of the hospital system's success and the 5-year champion award that it received from Newsweek, your response was to praise your team. And I know that the team and the institution you inherited was already a great institution, but there are things that you brought to it. If there's something that you can think of in the last 3 years mm-hmm. that you believe that you've done to impact the culture, what would you say that it is?
To me, culture is everything. Mm-hmm. Just last week, we surveyed all our associates and our doctors and to get their feedback, and mm-hmm. they've scored the highest they ever have in history. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really important, because if our team is feeling valued, respected, and have a voice, mm-hmm. It means to better patient care. One of the biggest things that I really focus on, or there's a few of them, one is creating a culture of really true psychological safety, mm-hmm. where people can bring their voices forward. And so we started a few years ago, just getting feedback and ideas from our associates, and then we implement their ideas. And this past year, our associates implemented 2,200 changes that they thought were right.
Wow.
And this year we set a goal for 2,700 from them. Mm-hmm. They submit something they want to improve or change or process. Sometimes it's an old policy. They're thinking that this isn't right. Sometimes it's like, if we got this bed, we could make a change in the mm-hmm. care of our decubitus ulcers for patients. And so the work is very personal in healthcare. And so we need every one of our associates to be engaged in solving the future. Mm-hmm. If you left it all up to me, we'd be in a whirlwind of trouble.
I doubt that.
So I was pretty excited to see that our associate satisfaction to be the highest it's been in history.
Myron, it was such a pleasure having you on the podcast today. I'm thrilled for the partnership that we have, and I am excited to have learned more about you in this conversation.
Thank you for your time today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Myron, thank you so much for being with us. We're so grateful for your commitment to the community and for meeting the needs of those around you. And thank you to all of our listeners. Please remember to subscribe and join us for future conversations. Until next time, take care.